Mike Alcoholic.
Mike.
Honored to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I'm really going to deal more with sobriety because I got more time. You know, I passed that line where I have been sober longer than I drank, and I thought that was absolutely a miracle. And so, you know, to make my drunkalogue, it's really simple. The first 4 or 5 years of my life, I totaled 2 cars. I was bedridden for 8 months with hepatitis, and I was incarcerated. I like to think of myself as being detained. And I was asked to leave a place that has the highest homicidal rate in the world as an undesirable. And I remember after all of that, you know, I remember laying on a couch in Dallas, Texas, guzzling Jack Daniels, thinking, thank God I got a handle on my drug problem. And so when I look at, you know, when I think of sobriety, you know, and my life did not, you know, it wasn't as dramatic as that, but really I stayed, I ingested drugs and alcohol, mostly alcohol, because that was my favorite, for the next, you know, 15 years. I was unable to not drink, period, daily. It's kind of interesting. My family has, it's really be interesting, because if my family were here, they would give you, they'd give you 4 different stories, because their story is different. You know, my brother drank for 4 or 5 years, and then it hit him. And my mother, she didn't even drink till she was 42 and drank herself to death by 60. And then my dad was just a consistent drunk throughout. But it wasn't this falling down stuff, you know. I mean, it was just consumption, and that's how I drank. So I was looking this morning, you know, about powerlessness, and I'm an alcoholic, and I just need to remember that. I'm an alcoholic today. And what's the most important thing that I need to know about that is some basic concepts. And one of them is powerlessness. And so I think, well, what about powerlessness? You know, I looked in, as Bill C said, there's nothing. But if I go to surrender, there's like 16, 18 pages. So for me, surrendering is to show that I am powerless. You know, I need to do the work, not talk about it. I need to do the work, not think about it. I need to, you know, how do I get honest? Well, you know, I was incapable of being honest. I wouldn't know the truth if my life depended on it. And so, you know, how did I get honest? I didn't get honest by being honest. I got honest by doing, just suiting up, showing up, and doing the work. You see, when, and it was, you know, after 20 years, when you'd ask me a question, you know, there is like this criteria of answers, and honesty was like 38. So what I would answer to you is, what do I think you need to hear? What's going to benefit me in this conversation? And whether it's true or not, it's kind of irrelevant, you know. And that was the best. I guess about 2 years sober, I remember standing up and saying, I'm relatively honest. And I was expecting a standing ovation, and they asked me to thank me again and asked me to sit down. I think so, you know, when I look at this whole business of, you know, powerlessness, you know, what exactly, you know, what is powerlessness today? And powerlessness is that if I ingest anything, which is mood altering, and I will activate my obsession, and I will activate my compulsion again. And as I go through this whole big drunkalogue business that I did for at the beginning, I realize that the only thing that's consistent is that really showed up at the end, which is my obsession. And the obsession shows up in me is that I gotta drink. You know, I tried the last 2 years, because prior to that, no matter what happened, during that whole period of time, nothing happened that deterred me from drinking. All that stuff happened, it was irrelevant. I just moved. You know, it was bad luck, I was a political prisoner, something I ate, you know, something. Even when I had hepatitis, the only thing I could think about is getting back down to San Salvador, because I could call a guy and send him, I can't drink, I get it. I mean, that's insane. Doctor told me that. So send me over some reefer. And so I'd smoke reefer every day, you know, until I could drink again. That's the kind of alcoholic that I am. And I didn't understand that. I thought, well, I do it because it's kind of fun or something. I didn't realize that the obsession to drink and is really about just an obsession. I get up in the morning with those last 2 years and tell myself, today I'm not going to drink. Today is the day, just today. You know, I'm not going to make a big habit out of this. But today, and the reason I even started on this quest was because God gave me the gift that has stopped working. And it is a gift. When all of a sudden I drink and I can't get that feeling it talks about, where I drink essentially because of the way it makes me feel, and I'm restless, irritable, and discontent by nature, and then I have to take a few drinks to alleviate that. I mean, I was in a just, I was petrified. I literally, because my life revolved around drugs and alcohol. I mean, this takes time to notice this stuff, but where I go to school, the people I hang around with, what countries I live in, what kind of job I take, everything revolved around my ability to continue to drink on a daily basis. And so when I was looking at this whole business about the obsessions, I get up every morning and I was at the Plaza, New York. So I was doing well, you know, I was a big shot. And today's the day I'm not going to drink, I'm not going to drink, I'm not going to drink. I would get up and I would, you know, I would go, you know, I ran to work, it was 6 miles, and I'd be pumped up and I was a big shot. And I'd be thinking, that's all I could think about, is drinking, not drinking, thinking, not drinking, thinking, not drinking. And then by around noon, I'd start stuttering. You know, I'd start, you know, you kind of get a little tense. And then, you know, by 2 or 3, you know, the word moderation would kick in. And then, you know, by 4 or 5, somebody would offer me a drink. And it was always yes or hell yes was my response. So I think that, you know, when I think about, you know, that to me is the obsession. And the compulsion is once I start, I cannot stop. I have never drank socially. I would have no desire to drink socially. I did not go to bars to sit around and drink, because if I did, people would notice how quickly I drank and how much I drank. And they'd kind of get those big eyes and shit. And so I just, I'm not messing with these people. I need to be around my kind of people, which ended up with me and my bottle and my dog. And so I think that when I look at that, and the compulsion is that once I ingest alcohol, I cannot stop drinking. And I will drink. I call it a two-fisted drinker. I mean, I was good for an hour and a half the last 10 years because I knew I could not, you know, people would sit around and drink all day. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. If I started drinking, I was good for an hour and a half, because once I started, I could not stop. And I would, there was none of this, well, because I had to get that feeling. You see, that feeling was so critical to me. And there was no postponing the feeling, like from noon to two. That was out of the question. I need it now. That to me is the compulsion. That is my insanity of alcoholism. And it's still with me. The only difference today is I don't ingest any drugs and alcohol, so I don't activate that. There is no question if I ingest drugs and alcohol, I will be right back there. Because everybody that I've known over all these years has told me when they went out, it came right back. Occasionally somebody will say, well, I lasted a few days or whatever. But if they drank like I did, it goes right back to that. You know, my brother was a binge drinker. So it was different for him. He'd tell me, I can go for a couple months, you know. And then I start drinking. I don't show up for 4 or 5 days. And I go, so just find a job every quarter. I mean, what's the problem? So I think that when I look at, you know, I have to accept your drinking deal is your drinking and mine is mine. That's why the book to me is so critical when it talks about share my experience drinks. You know, precisely how have I recovered. Because my drinking could be very different from yours. And so it doesn't mean that my way of doing my sobriety, it may not be work for you. And yours may not work for me. I don't sit here and judge it. So I don't tell people what they need to do. That's insane. How would I know what you need to do? You know, I know what I do. And this is what I do, and it works for me. So anyway, as I go through the, you know, and the, so the powerlessness and compulsion. So I'm in San Francisco, and I get sober. You know, if I get sober, I go home that night. I went to AA, and I went home that night, didn't drink, and I was just astonished by that. Because during that 2 years, I drank. I mean, I may make it till 8 or 9 o'clock at night, but I had to drink something to get to sleep. It was a medicinal thing. I was so important. You know what I mean? I just said I was active, and I had so many important things going on. I needed to get my sleep, and so I would drink my little shooter, which was 12 ounces of vodka. And so when I get sober, and I'm starting to look around, and I think I'm okay. You know, it is working. You know, this thing is working because I'm not drinking. And so I literally got up the next day, went to a meeting. You know, and I didn't care what you said. I was a little skeptical of you people. I remember the one place we went in, there's a big window. I said, Debbie, we need to sip. I grabbed Debbie, you know, backed me up on this thing. Because if they were like the people, you know, they'd all say, well, they're like us. And I thought, well, if I'm going back to see those people, you know, I'm not armed or anything, you know, I'm just going to have to go in there and sit. So I'd always sit in front of the window in case something happened. And I would sit there and say, in case we have to bail out, we'll go out the window. And she goes, I don't think anything's going to happen. Well, you never know. So I think that, you know, and I just kept going back, you know, I absolutely didn't grasp, you know, people would talk about being a nicer husband. Ah, good for you. And they were talking about being powerless. And I thought, oh, that's a bit dramatic for a guy like me. And because I didn't understand that part. I just knew I couldn't stop drinking. I don't know, you know, I just could not. And then people would talk about problems. And I thought, oh, you people. Good. I was okay, though, because I was not drinking. And that was the only thing that worked. You know, I remember going to church and telling the priest I had a drinking problem. He told me to quit drinking. And I thought, well, what good is that? I mean, anybody could do that. And I went to AA in 1984. I went to Marietta with my brother, and he took me to a meeting. Nice people. But you guys were big on abstinence. And I thought, it's got to be another way to resolve my drinking problem rather than stopping. I mean, that just didn't register there. I went to doctors, and they didn't know either. They'd tell me to quit drinking. I thought, what a cop-out. So I think that when I look at this whole, you know, when I look at powerlessness, it's about showing up, because I did not grasp it. I remember, I got to tell you, I used to go to those meetings, and I'd have to look for the Serenity Prayer because I could not memorize the Serenity Prayer. You know? I was so spaced because, poof, I am sober now. And, you know, the body is just not taking it well. My nervous system is screaming, you know, what's going on up there? I mean, what are you doing? Not that it was that I missed the, you know, because I knew it wouldn't work. It's still the physical manifestations of drugs, and drugs had pretty much gone. So it was alcohol. And there aren't physical manifestations from alcohol. There's no, in my mind, in my case, there was. I used to have muscle spasms. And I'd be sitting in meetings, and I start, you know, and they look at me, and I go, well, what do you think that is? And I go, well, I'm such an active guy, you know, I'm busy and got things to do. And they just, you know, tell me to keep coming back, you'll be all right. And, you know, I would lay in bed and jerk. My whole body would jerk, you know, and what's that about? I don't know, I just did, who knows. And I had this incredible ability to just disregard stuff, you know, who cares. So as I kept back, they kept starting talking about this God business. And I kept hearing, you got to do the God business because the only thing between me and a drink is God. And I thought, well, I believe in God. Absolutely. And in fact, I couldn't believe that somebody wouldn't believe in God. And I was astonished by that. And then fortunately, I didn't voice that a lot. But in my mind, that's what I thought. You guys are idiots. And somebody come up and say, well, I'm having a struggle with the God thing. Well, why would you have a struggle with the God thing? God thing is, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? And most of the time, he'd buy me the Mercedes. The problem I had with is after 2 days, I didn't want the Mercedes anymore. And then I'd complain to God, why'd you buy me a Mercedes? And so that first year, you know, was praying for stuff, literally. Oh, Lord, won't you do this? Because I got to tell you, it really did work for me. When I had hepatitis, I asked God, please fix my liver. And he did. And when I was detained, I said, God, you got to get me out of this situation. And he did. And when I would total a car, you know, I said, God, you got to get me out of this mess. And come up with some great story to tell these people. And I would tell them, and they'd buy it, you know, and they'd fix the car or whatever. So I understood the God business. So I would say, why wouldn't you believe in God? I mean, that's kind of like playing lotto. You know, there is a chance you hit it. And then I realized, you know, I would hear people talking about, yeah, but I never did anything for God. And I thought, well, that's true, you know. So I think that, you know, that went on for about 18 months, and I still, you know, the mental aspect of it, and I memorized the self for self, so I got it. You know, I understood that from S. You know, they said it's all about me. I got it. Clear about that. Everything I do is based on what I want. Everything. And when I tell you I'm helping you, believe me, if I do help you, it's based on what I, you know, for me. It's always all about me, and I can't help that. And what really helped me with AA is that I would recognize that as something that I'm powerless over. I don't make that choice. When I get up in the morning and I acted as I did what I did. And it just happened to be driven by myself, you know, by that self, those screaming me's. And I didn't really know that because I didn't. What I noticed when I started the work was that I didn't really have an option. It never showed up as an option. I can do this or I can do that. It always was this. There was only one way to do things, and that was the way I did it. And it was always driven by me, to the self or self-centeredness. And I didn't understand the fears, and I kept reading that, you know, self or self-centeredness is the root. And I, you know, and they talk about the tree and the branches and the leaves and all that, and then they'd say the root. You know, so basically, when you get overcome, this is when they bury you. You know, because when you resolve the root problem, you resolve it. And I thought, well, that's cute, you know, and all that stuff. But I was not drinking, and I was okay with that. You know, and my behavior, I think, was clearly, you know, it was like I had my happy list, and before, you know, I was comatose half the time, so I can only achieve certain much stuff during the day, because once I start drinking, I couldn't do much. Well, now I got all day. And buddy, I'm making up whatever I lost before, I'm making up today. So I had my list, happy list, I used to call them. And I'd have ABC. And so when I go through the first list and I get everything that I wanted and I'm still miserable, I think, well, that's the wrong list. Never occurred to me that the list isn't going to fix me. And that was okay, because it kept me busy. It really kept me very busy. I started to struggle, you know, and they talk about the insanity of alcohol and the drinking, and I really got that, because I looked at it, when you were talking about the insanity, you were talking about the fact that I cannot not drink. That's what I thought you were talking about. So I accepted that. True, you're absolutely correct. I am insane, and that's all there is to it. It didn't occur to me how that thinking reflected on my life. You know, I did not understand that, and I got to tell you, I didn't even understand any of this until I went through the work, the footwork. I did second, third step, you know, and then I went to a four-step study, and I spent 13 weeks there, and then I did a fifth step, and then I started to understand the first step. And then I started to understand the second step, really. That's how it worked for me. Because to me, all of this stuff is about footwork. You know, I was in a meeting last night, and somebody was, you know, bringing up that they didn't see where acceptance was anywhere in the big book. Well, acceptance isn't, because acceptance is the result of doing the work. Sobriety is the result of doing the work. Honesty is, in my mind, in my case, is the result of doing the work. I cannot be honest by being honest. I remember sitting there in a meeting, sitting there going, they say, well, honesty and all that's really important. I said, okay, I get it. I'll stop lying. Somebody came and said, what's your name? I said, who's asking? You know, I could not tell you the truth. It just, you know, that truth business was way. And what I did was, and I still do, is I still do the work. And the other thing that was really, I thought was an asset, some people consider a detriment, is that I know everything. You know, that I know, I know, I know. Somebody tried to tell me something. I know, I know. And the I knows it is got me in enough pain to do the work. It's astonishing how, and that's where I really kind of started understanding insanity. I know things without having any source of information. And I would start looking, and I would start, you know, as the time goes by, and I'm going through the fourth step, and I'm starting to look at stuff, and I'm starting, you know, I have my brother who I'm calling, who, like Debbie, knows what happened. So when I try to tell him, you know, that I was a political prisoner, he goes, no, you weren't, you know. And it was something I ate down in Mexico. That's how I got hepatitis. I know, that's not what the doctor said. And all these, you know, the car, it was raining, and it wasn't raining. You know, you missed the turn. You drank a bottle of vodka, and you think you're Parnelli Jones. You're going down a hill, and you just don't turn. And then you hate the French, because it was a Renault. And the Renault should be able to jump a little curve. You know, like a 3-foot curve, and it should not take the bottom of the car out. So I hate the French. And I didn't think much of the Japanese either, because they, you know, they just didn't make a car that could deal with you know, guardrails, frankly. But I think, you know, when I started, you know, it was kind of amusing, because I started looking at it, I said, that's kind of goofy. I mean, that's crazy, especially when you live your life based on the fact that I don't like French people. And somebody had to say, well, how many Frenchmen do you know? Well, I don't know any. You know, I don't like the Chinese either. Well, how many Chinese do you know? I don't know any. You know, I mean, when I started looking at the sources, when I started identifying, you know, my insanity, and say, this is insane when you come up with these final absoluteness is what I refer to it as. It's an insane absoluteness. And you have no source of information, None. So what I've started to do, you know, over a period of years is if I'm the sole source of the information, I disregard it as untrue. And then I'll go check with somebody else to see if they confirm what I'm thinking. Because I really don't. I really still, you know, my insanity is one that has not left me. You know, I still, that selfish self-centeredness and that restless, irritable, and discontent, and those feelings still continue to exacerbate in my life. You know, it doesn't happen every day, but I'm aware of that. You know, I get up in the morning and how is my alcoholism going to affect me today? And it has not disappointed me. You know, during the day, something will show up and go, that's why I got to keep focused on this thing. That's why I keep going to the meetings. That's why I have to keep doing the work in the morning. And this is why I have to do the writings and all that stuff. Not because I particularly like to, you know. And then that selfish self-centeredness that it refers to is two sides to that coin. And the other side has been a huge benefit to me. Because I recognize this deal works better than not. I know that my life is insurmountably better than it ever was. Absolutely. That is not enough to keep me sober. It is not. But it does come up at times to give me that what it is that I need, which is the selfish self-centered, to continue. If I go to the meeting, I'll be better off than if I don't go to the meeting, I go to the meeting. You know, I do the work because it's going to make me, you know, it's going to be a benefit to me, not to you. If I had, I don't know how many meetings I'd go to if it wasn't a benefit for me coming. You know, I have a lot of respect for people that say, I hate going to meetings, but I go anyway. I don't. You know, God has graced me with that. I go to meetings because I want to go to meetings. Because this is where I hear it and this is where I learn it. I don't hear it anywhere else. You know, I just don't. You know, the best, you know, I certainly don't hear it on TV and I don't hear it in church. I mean, it's some aspects of it I do hear. But this is where I get the walking directions on how to live my life. And this is where I hear what's really going on in me because I still don't see it. You know, when I look at, you know, those two options, they still sometimes don't come up as two options. I'm absolutely convinced that I'm right until I hear you say something, and that's stupid. I think, well, that's what I'm doing. You know, it's watching somebody conduct themselves the way I conduct myself, and that's the only way that I am able to recognize my, you know, my behavior. You know, I mean, it's really interesting because part of my insanity, I mean, I was in Puerto Rico and I'm driving down and this guy stops. And I blow my horn. I love blowing my horn in Puerto Rico. Everybody blows their horn in Puerto Rico. It's kind of like it's a sport driving in Puerto Rico. And so, all bets are off. You get to do what you want to do and all that stuff. And so I got, for crying out loud, and I was not, you know, I'm like, I think the second time I was like 8 years sober. And I'm thinking, for crying out loud, what's wrong with this guy? And I swear to God, I didn't get to the end of the block, and somebody walked down. I started talking to him, and I'm parked right. I'm sitting right there in the middle of the street, and I've noticed that when I complain about you, it's going to happen to me, on everything, you know. And so God has graced me a lot with these things. So when I look at, you know, the biggest thing that I think I've noticed about my insanity at where I'm at, you know, at this point, is that I cannot bring up, you know, page 24, I cannot bring up with sufficient force the pain, suffering, humiliation of a week ago. That's scary stuff for me. That's how I understand why people go out after many years of sobriety. What happened? Because the only thing, you know, and that's why I'm also big on that, the only way to resolve that is by abstaining from alcohol. I have never had somebody come up to me, oh, when that shows up, this is what you do. And what I realize is what I need to do is not drink, period. You know, so I have to come up with this concept, which is I don't drink under any and all conditions. Because I drank under any and all conditions. And so, and it was really helpful those first couple of years. They talk about slippery places, and I would just, you know, where do I go? I drank under any and all conditions. So what do you mean by slippery place? What kind of stupid comment is that? And I used to get pretty hyper. I know it's hard to believe, but, you know, because I, you know, that tenseness, you know, and I was very explosive. That's how I deal with fear. I was explosive, and I used to think I'm brave, blah, blah, blah. It's not. It's none of it about that. My aggressiveness comes from my fear. When I was, you know, when I was with those first 4 or 5 years, I got myself in a number of situations with people, and the way I dealt with this by being aggressive. And people would look at, you know, and I got real clear that if they think you're nuts, they leave you alone. They do. And so I've been in places which are less than admirable, and they go, leave that guy alone. And these are people that murder people, you know, and I was scared to death of these people. And they go, don't mess with those people. Those are, see, the beauty of it, I got to tell you, during that period is that everybody thought that anybody that smoked weed was Charlie Manson. So the murderers said, we don't want them in our area. And the thieves didn't want them in their area, you know. And I mean, and it was really, so they had to make a separate section for us. And it was grand. I drank and smoked and did everything in there more than I did anywhere else. It was wonderful. Because they put everybody in there that did that. All the traficantes and all that stuff, they were all there. And so I understood that. But the problem is when I left that environment, I took it with me. I didn't sit there and say, well, wait a minute, I'm not there anymore. You don't act that way outside of there. That's a survival tool, and it works. You're outside, but I didn't. I took it with me everywhere I went. And so people would, I'd be in a business meeting or something, and boy, that fear comes up. And when that fear comes up, poof. And I would just walk out of it going, I don't understand why I get so angry. I mean, I would call my brother after 5 years, say, God, I can't understand what's going on. He said, well, what do you mean? What do you think? I said, well, everybody's really aggravated with me. And he goes, really? What do you think it is? I don't know. That's why I'm calling you. And he says, well, might it have been something you said? And I go, no, honest. And he said, well, I told him I went in this meeting. I was not going to get mad. I was telling myself, I'm not going to get mad. I'm not going to get mad. I'm not going to blow up. And I walk in there 5 minutes later, boom. And I told him. He said, would you tell him? I told him the truth because I'm rigorously honest now. And I told him to go F themselves, all of them. And he said, they didn't take it well? And I go, no, not really. But even after I told that, I still didn't grasp it, you know? I mean, that's insanity. That to me is, and the only way I get past that is time. I mean, it's not like I'm figuring it out. This stuff is not stuff that I figured it out. It's about, for me, it's about walking through it. You know, that's what I do is I walk through this stuff. And I kept going back to meetings and I would, you know, I'd get around people that were focused on the book. And I was really lucky those first couple of years because I was not old timers and they were not concerned with how I felt. And they were not concerned. They would be, you know, they were rigorously honest with me. And I desperately needed that. So when I went through the second step, and it's, to me, when I started to understand that the second step really is the journey, not the destination. So by telling you that I got it, I've lost it. You know, the idea is I don't know. I'm teachable. I don't know. When somebody sits there and says, this acceptance is nonsense and there's no way in the forest, I don't know that. If it works for you, do it. If it doesn't work for you, don't do it. I know that acceptance for me is after I did the work, I got to the point where I could accept my alcoholism. It had nothing to do with trying to focus on accepting it. I did the work. I recognized as I went through the steps my powerlessness and that my life was unmanageable. And then I started to get to the God business, and then I went to the third, you know, turning it over. My struggle, I will tell you now, and so the God thing has been a problem. It still is developing now. You know, I had to go back to the beginning because the God of my understanding was the, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes? And that ain't going to work. You know, the God of my understanding has to be he's in charge, not me. And so I went back and after the fourth step, what it did for me is I recognized that alcoholism was a power greater than myself. And so if I was able to stay sober, then there had to be a power greater than that. And that became the God of my understanding, the higher power. And as the years go by, I have redeveloped, you know, the God of my understanding. But it's my God, you know, and it works. And I got to tell you, each year, at 5 years, the God of my understanding will not work at 10. And at 10, not at 15, at 15, at 20, at 20, 25. It's the process. And the only way I can keep that process going is that I don't know. That's why, you know, when I heard last night, somebody got real defensive. I said, that's, if somebody questions me and I get defensive, that's my problem. I want you to question me because if I'm right, I'm right. But I also recognize that I could be right at 20 years and 20 years sobriety and have the same concept as 25 and ain't right anymore. I'm not moving along. I am not growing. I am not developing. Somebody once told me they were working on empathy. I had no empathy. Zero. Because it's all about me. How can I have empathy with you if it's all about me? The only empathy I would have towards you is how it affected me. And I didn't recognize that as an issue. I really didn't. When you people said that life is not about getting what you want, losing what you have, I thought you were out of your minds. Why else are we here? You know, I was a firm believer in, you know, the guy with the most toys who dies wins. I mean, that's why I go to work, to make money, to go spend money, to do whatever I do. And especially after I quit drinking, because before it was all revolving around my drinking and using. Now all of a sudden you take that out and what am I going to do with this money? Never. I mean, it's just, that's how oblivious I was to what was going on. So as I go through the process of the second step, it's just, you know, to me, I developed the God of my understanding. I developed the footwork associated with that, which I thought was very imperative, especially the morning, the morning prayers and stuff. I was real easy on the prayer stuff because whenever I wanted to drink, if I prayed to God to please remove it, he did. So I'm all over that. You know, anything that that benefits me, I'm all over. As the years have gone by, you know, there's times when I've had 10 meditation books, you know, and I can't even remember after I read them all. If you said, well, what did you read? I don't know. But it worked because I stayed sober through that. That's, to me, that's the footwork. The result is not mine. The result's God. So when I look at, you know, when my greatest problem arose on the third step when it talked about turning my will and my life over to the care of God. I thought, whoa. Because what I heard those first 2 years, 18 months or so, was I turned my drinking and using problem over. No problem. You know, that's a given. And so I'm not drinking, it's working, so I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. I'm doing the first, second, third step. It's obvious to me. And so that's how I got into the fourth step. Guy comes up, he says, you got to do the fourth step. I said, yeah, yeah. He said, no, you just go to this fourth step study. And I went. I just went. They were, you know, it was for dummies. You know, you go in the first week and they say, don't think. Just sit here, grab your pen, write all the people that you're pissed off with. Oh, I can do that. You know what I mean? And then, you know, how many institutions? I can do that, you know. And then, you know, the second, you know, how? Oh, I love that. These people, poor, pitiful me. They were just nasty to me. And then, you know, I did it column by column by column. Till at the end of it, it was fine. You know, here it is. Now go take it to somebody and tell them about it. So I didn't understand why people get unwound up about this four-step business. When I went to see the fifth step, you know, I went to see a priest. Why would you not go to see a priest? He can't tell anybody. You know what I mean? Anything that I'm writing down, it's been over 7 years, I'm covered. You know, I haven't done anything where, it's so bad that they're going to hunt me down after 20 years or 10 years, whatever it was. I'm good. But that's how my mind works. I'll go to the priest. Because if he says anything, he will go directly to hell. He will not pass go, and he will not get his $200. It's the mind of a child. You know, I'm still 15 or 14 years old. So anyway, I get into the third step, and they're starting to talk about, I'm okay with the God. I'm really good with the God business, and I've actually developed a God that works for me. You know, I've got that part of it. And then they start talking about turning your will and your life over. And I said, well, what happens if he wants me to drive an old car? What really came down to is, what happens if he doesn't want to give me what I want? That's really what it all comes down to. What happens if I want something and he doesn't think it's good? And so I think the pain got me to that spot. And it's a process. It's about getting the third step. It's about going through the prayers, going through the writings. You know, I can, he can, I'll let him. Most of the time when I can't do the third step, I go back to the second step. And if I'm struggling there, I go back to the first step. Because really, if I can, I don't need the God business, period. And if I can't do it, and then I need the God business, then there's got to be that issue where God will take care of me. You see, I have never achieved that level where no problem, God says that I'm going to go do it. This is like, God, what's in it for me, God? And I have the faith today that God is going to take care of me. So he's never going to require of me something to do that I feel will hurt me or will not benefit me. When I don't get something, I can guarantee you at a period of time I'm grateful I didn't get it. You know, because I want, I want, I want, I want. That's how I operate. A good example of that, I was down in the islands in St. John, and that job came to an end, and there was this other, one of the islands, and there was a big resort, and I said, I want to go there, God. But I always remember, you got to say, if thy will, you know, because I'm very spiritual now. And so when I gave him my list of 13 things that I wanted him to do, I would always follow up with, if thy will. And one of them was, I really want to go to this island. I want to go there and do this resort. And so I actually get an interview. I fly to New York, talk to this guy, and I fly back, and I didn't get the job, and I have to come back to the States. And 3 months later, a hurricane went through and leveled it, completely leveled it. And when the guy got his insurance money, he walked. He didn't try to rebuild the hotel. So I started, those are the kind of things that have benefited. I mean, I don't get it by just reading and, this faith business. Faith to me comes from doing the work. Because things work out for me better. It's that whole issue about the farmer and, the horses and, it's good. I don't know if it's good or bad. I just know it is. In my mind, God is always going to take care of me. And that's just time for me. That's just doing the work and experiencing that. I didn't get it by listening to you and telling me that it worked for you. I need to experience that. And I have experienced that. So it's easy now. See, to me today, it's easy. Why? Because it's a benefit to me to turn it over. I don't have any question that anything comes up in my life in the last 10 years that I don't know God will do a better job than Mike. So it's really easy to turn it over. So when I look at, the third step is I can't, he can't, I'll let him. When I'm struggling with a God, I will not turn it over. And that's what I was doing. I was, the God of my understanding. We're not sure where we fit in the scheme of things. And it's just time. I get enough pain, then I'll do it. How did I do the fourth step? The fourth and fifth step, I think I did just out of, I'm focused and I'm a business guy. So, you do your to-do list and you go do it. So those things just became like another to-do list. I had no concept of what I was doing. I hear people talking about the fourth step and the fifth step. And what are you talking about? You just get a pen and paper, you go do it, and then you go take it to some guy, make sure it's either a lawyer, a doctor. I mean, don't be stupid. Don't go to the local police department and tell them. I mean, that's common sense. Just do it. There were things on the fourth step that I missed. It's okay. It's kind of like letting Mike out and letting God in. And that takes work. It's taken me a lot of work. So when I think about, how did I get past it, I got to tell you, it really had to do with the successes of turning it over. I needed a job. I asked God to find me a job. They said, because when I'm struggling, I would ask, well, how do you do it? He said, well, just take one thing. Forget about the whole life. Just do one thing. See how it works out. Because if you do that one thing and it works out, you'll do another. And that's exactly how it's worked for me. And I got a real good job. And my insanity, it's just time. I'm not sure that that's ever going to get resolved. It is better than it used to be. I remember sitting in Puerto Rico, and I went to it was the El San Juan. It was a very nice hotel. And it was the first 5-star hotel in Puerto Rico, and I'm sitting down in San Juan, and I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, I don't want to do this. I'm just uncomfortable. I'm not going to do it. I don't want to be here. I'm not going to do it. So he comes, after the interviews, and they sit down with me, and he goes, well, how much do you want? And I thought, this is how I'll get out of it. I'll just throw out a number there that's way over what I've ever made, and they'll say no. So I throw the number out. He goes, no problem. The paradigm changed. Just like click. Oh, this is beautiful. I love this place. I love the weather. I love this. I love that. That's when I started recognizing that I'm not all here. They used to say we come here because we're not all there, And it worked out. It just worked out. And from there, I went down to St. John. I moved a lot, I still have some character issues. I don't know if it's alcoholism or if it's personality. I get, boredom. I struggled a lot with boredom. It never occurred to me that boredom was a character defect. I mean, boredom is that I expect you, this world, to keep me entertained all the time. And if you don't, there's going to be hell to pay. Because I'm going to get cranky. And if I'm unhappy, guess who else is going to be unhappy? And I just didn't recognize that. I just thought what I thought. So, how does the insanity leave me? It leaves me by doing the work, suiting up and showing up, going to meetings, turning it over works after I do it and it works. After I do it and it works. After experience of I really want to do this, I really want to do this, okay, I don't do it, and all of a sudden it turns out, thank God I didn't do that. That kind of stuff. And then I said, that's how I grow in faith. Faith is about what happens after I do the work. This is what I get, is I get this thing called faith. And the more I do, the more faith I get. And the more faith I get, the more comfortable I get. Once I make that determination, I'm on it. Then I'm back to, I'll do the footwork, no problem. I'll be more than happy to do the footwork. The fourth step was, as I go through the fourth and fifth step, as I was pretty nuts. I really was convinced that I was a political prisoner. And so when I was going through the fifth step and I was through the fourth step with my brother, I was telling him, when it says what happened and how unfair they were, I call him and tell him, this stuff is, I hope they notice this. I hope something happens about this because I'm not happy. And he'd say, well, Mike, I don't remember that. I remember picking you up in Miami at the airport. And, you're urinating blood, and we'd rush you to the hospital. And what did the doctor say? Well, I don't know. I don't know if he knew what he was talking about. And I think he, I remember him coming in and he had this chart and he goes, do you do drugs? No. My mother's here for crying out loud. What kind of a question is that to ask? And I said, no, are you sure? Now, Mike, this and your mom says you're RN and she's been an RN for many years. I know her. This is, all between us. Do you do drugs? No. Mike, I have your blood test. Once. Once I remember. I didn't mean to. And so anyway, he comes back in with a medical journal or something. So he starts reading about how you have to have a liver. And so I'm missing, And so, how important it is. And he goes over this business about how my liver's about shot. So he finishes it. Do you have any questions? I said, yes, doctor. I got a backache, and I can't sleep at night. Can you give me something? And he just shook his head and walked out. And I was just, I told him to my mother, I said, what kind of bedside manner is that? I mean, where do you find these doctors? And so I understand that, as an alcoholic, the powerlessness, I can't rely on anything other than, in my mind, God, that is so dramatic that's going to get me to stop drinking and using. It's just it never happened. That's why I don't spend a lot of time on the drunk log. I had a guy sit down and say, well, okay, what event took place in your life that was so dramatic that you didn't drink for a day? I had to drink to go through that event. I mean, if you total out a car, you go home, you got to have a drink to go to sleep. You know what I mean? Then you got to get up in the morning, go buy another car. You know what a hassle that is. And so, things like that's how I operated. So when I think of powerlessness, that's still there. I'm just abstinent. And you'll hear me talk a lot about abstinence. And I really want to close with this, is that I've seen a lot of people, and I go ask them. Guy goes after many years. I say, woo. And the only thing consistent in all of their stories was that the last thing I was thinking about before I drank was drinking. And that, to me, is really important. And that they drank. They consumed alcohol. That's the only two things that are consistent with all of their stories. So it's not like I'm going to be able to figure out, because I was originally, I did it because I'll figure out how to avoid that. My wife yelled at me, so I'll figure out how, when she yells at me, what I'll do. But it had nothing to do with that. And it really worried me. And then when I go back to that page 24 and it repeats it, those are the two areas that I know they repeat, And once again, I have no mental defense against the next drink. And that's where the God thing comes in. That's why the critical, that's where I got clear that I got to have the God business, because God is going to keep me clean and sober. And I believe at this point in my sobriety that I cannot stay sober without a God of my understanding, whatever that is, and however you present it or whatever, whatever. And I think that it's really important for me not to have to understand it, because I went through that whole process of, who he is and that. I remember walking, I got to tell you this. When I'm struggling with the God business, they say, well, go in there and raise your hand. Tell me you want to talk about the God business. So I'd walk in all the meetings. Hey, I want to talk about the God business. And everybody's very nice, and they talk about. So one person, I said, what do you want to talk about the God business? And I was stunned at that point because I had never thought that through. So I asked them, I said, well, is the Virgin Mary really a virgin? And they thanked me for sharing, and I sat down, you know. But even through all that, the one thing that saved me was an old lady got up, and she says, you don't get God or get fucked. And that just resonated. I got it, because I'd been screwed for so long, for so many years. I knew exactly what she was talking about, and I didn't want to go there. And I saw this as an out. And that's how it resonated in me. I didn't hear the profanity of it. I saw, to me, it was the heart-to-heart. And that I'm really grateful that God allowed me to hear that. And I've heard a lot of those things, you know, that eat manure and die, just don't drink. And those are things that help me. Because there will be a time when I can bring up the sufficient, but I cannot not drink. It is possible not to drink. I have been sober over 26 years. I am an example of a person who drank every day of their life, under any and all conditions, and I have not ingested any drugs and alcohol in over 26 years. So you know it can be done. You know, a day at a time, still a day at a time, but it can be done. And so, you know, I share my story, your story could be different, everybody's story gets to be different, and that's the beauty of this thing. And I take what I can use and leave the rest. I don't have to make my story your story. And if it works for you, it may work for you, it may not work for me. My job, I am responsible for my sobriety. I am responsible. Not you, not the group, not my sponsor, nobody else. My job is in the morning, I get up, I take responsibility for my sobriety. I'm an alcoholic, and how am I going to manage this thing today? So thank you very much.